Welcome into Tar Heel Talk here on WCHL. Blake Hodge alongside Ross Martin, and we are very pleased to be able to welcome back to the program. First repeat guest, I believe, here, Andrew Carter.
It's a big time honor, Andy.
Observer there.
It is. I'm honored, Bolt and Blake. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Yeah, we have got a lot going on. Of course, UNC coming off of a win at Davidson, or against Davidson here in Chapel Hill, I should say, as the what was thought to be the starting backcourt going into the season was sitting next to each other in suits. Joel Berry, Theo Pinson, both dealing with foot injuries. But Roy last night was clearly not happy with the execution from his team, the effort from his team. What did y'all see from that game last night? You know, looking at it from my perspective of being able to just watch the game last night, not there in person, it certainly seemed like it was a game that, you know, what Davidson's going to bring seemingly every year. They're always going to be a solid, well-coached team and do all those things correctly. And against a Carolina team that was without some of those veteran ball handlers that have been leading the offense, certainly felt like it could fall into a trap game. They came out early on and were able to have that comeback in the first half, but never able to really blow anybody out of the water.
No, you're right. UNC almost gave up a 16-point second-half lead. They led by that many with about 12 minutes to go, and then just kind of stumbled. You know, Roy used some strange lineups last night. One of those came in the first half. He benched all of the starters there, which sometimes he does to send a message to his guys. And that lineup, it was Stillman White, Luke May, and then the three freshmen. And those guys actually kind of brought UNC back out of the doldrums a little bit. I think they went on something like a 12-3 run, took the lead. But yeah, kind of a, you know, to use some Roy parlance, just a weirdo, wacky game. That's something that he says sometimes. But, you know, Justin Jackson was obviously the bright spot, but you're right, UNC could never really put Davidson away. Again, some of those lineups he used in the second half, they were a little bit strange, and I'm not sure he would have used those on like a January Wednesday night in an ACC game. But mid-December here, it's a little bit different. You're experimenting. You know, my main takeaway is that it's a win. You know, if they make it to the final Monday night, like we were talking about before the show started, UNC will have played something like 40 games. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be sharp every single game, night in, night out, 40 times in a row.
Roy was a little more blunt in his assessment last night.
He said we sucked.
Here, let's hear it from the horse's mouth.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut your question off, but we sucked. Okay. Now my wife's going to be mad at me.
Wanda probably a little upset last night.
I mean, my major takeaway is that the offense just looked kind of lost at times. And I think when you're missing your point guard, that happens. And I've thought that a couple times this season that without Paige, the offense hasn't run as well. And when you throw in Seventh Woods or Nate Britt to kind of run the show, it seemed like they couldn't get into the flow. And they double-teamed Meeks and Hicks every time they caught the ball. Mm-hmm. And that's something that you can beat easily if you just know where to look with the ball. I mean, you throw it out of the double team, someone's open. But Davidson was pretty effective with that. And that's kind of why I think Meeks and Hicks struggled just turnover-wise. Both of them really didn't get an offensive flow. Most of their baskets were off rebounds or kind of fast break stuff.
Yep.
And, you know, UNC's bread and butter is that inside game. When you take that away, you have guys jacking up shots. Luckily, Justin Jackson hit a great percentage of that last night. And one of the – has to be the reason they won was because of Justin Jackson's just consistency from deep.
Yep. But 7 out of 13 from three-point range. So almost tying the single-game record for UNC. That was at 8. I think about a half dozen guys have that.
Yep.
But most he had ever hit in a game was 4. So, yeah, certainly a great showing last night. But Roy was clearly upset with the whole team. But he focused that at Isaiah and Kennedy. A couple – you know, we talk about all the – you know, the struggles of some of the freshmen, but the two seniors that you have there, of guys that trying to make up for the hole that was left with Bryce Johnson being gone, he was clearly upset with their execution last night. He said, we practice that double team. Mm-hmm. Virginia does it to us every year. We know that's coming, and they just didn't execute.
No, they didn't. And it's been, you know, Kennedy Meeks has had some nice moments early on this season. I think he's, I don't know after last night how it affected his stats, but he was averaging a double-double entering that game. He's played well in stretches. You know, Hicks has been just kind of up and down. He's done a better job of limiting his fouls, which was a really big question surrounding him entering the year. He was a guy who by far led UNC the past several seasons, actually, in fouls per minute. And that was something that he was going to have to do a much better job of entering this year, is just staying on the court, you know, avoiding foul trouble. He did get into foul trouble last night. But then the flip side of that is, how do you kind of ramp up your intensity and go after rebounds and kind of get after it the way that Roy wants him to get after it, with kind of being not very aggressive when you're always thinking about avoiding foul trouble? So I think maybe that's one thing going on with Isaiah. And then, I mean, you know, in some ways you just kind of have to accept who Isaiah is. I mean, you know, he's been here 4 years. I think a lot of people expected him to take this giant leap entering the season. I had high expectations for him. I thought that he might be UNC's best player. But I do think that he misses playing alongside a dominant offensive player in Bryce Johnson. You know, Joel Berry has not really missed playing alongside Marcus Paige. That was, mm-hmm. that was also a question. But I think Isaiah clearly has missed playing alongside Bryce. Bryce received a lot of defensive attention, freed things up a bit for Isaiah. And I think the transition for him becoming the man, so to speak, has been a little bit more difficult this year than a lot of people anticipated.
Well, I mean, people watched him playing high school in 30 and 30 in the state championship game. That gives you a lot to look forward to from a UNC fan perspective. But, you know, some of those games that he really played well last year, it was playing off of Bryce. Entire that Syracuse game specifically coming to mind, of Bryce facilitating so much.
Yeah, I think he's had some great moments. I mean, he looks better, more comfortable playing kind of that power four position when you're starting from the top of the key and making a quick move, but he's just not consistent. That's kind of been the knock on him since he got here, coming in as like a five-star guy. He hasn't really progressed, you'd like to see, but it's still kind of early. UNC gets the win, they get out. You did like to see Meeks and Hicks knocking down 2 of 2 from free throws late.
Yeah, that was important.
And Meeks making a couple of rebounds there late and tying up that ball. You like that? I do like Meeks's growth. I think he's just a little more active. Mm-hmm. He's had a quicker – you've seen him play every game. He seems just a little bit quicker off the jump, a little more mobile inside in what he does. And so he's kind of stepping into that role. You're just waiting for Hicks. I thought he was going to be the most important player for UNC when you look at their lack of interior depth. Like, Hicks was going to be the guy they needed the most.
Yeah.
But now that Bradley's kind of stepped up.
Yeah, Tony has filled a big void there. And Kennedy seems to be more aggressive than he has been. Yeah. And, you know, with Bryce, with the way that he went after rebounds, Kennedy at least seems to be increasing that effort a little bit on the rebounding side of it from
He is, yeah. I think there's more want to there with him, and I think he's healthy too. That's a big difference. Yeah. You know, last year he had these weird kind of nagging injuries and knee thing early in the season, and then late in the year he had something going on, kind of a lack of confidence issues, some mental stuff with him. I think he was a player sometimes in the past who, you know, let his attitude get him down. You know, things that he could control, he didn't do a very good job of controlling in terms of reacting to different situations the appropriate way.
I think when, you know, he entered the NBA draft or whatever, tried to get the, mm-hmm. what was that called, when they get the things checked
out? Go through the combine.
Yeah, the combine,
you know, he didn't get invited to the combine.
That's true, yeah.
So I think that was maybe a shock to him, that he needs to really take a jump and make some changes and take that next step and prove that he can be an NBA player. So that could be some intrinsic motivation this season. You've kind of seen that leap. But clearly last night you saw how much this team needs Joel Berry.
Yeah.
And he is obviously the most important player for this team on offense and defense. I know at certain press conferences, Roy's talked about how important his defense is, guarding 94 feet, really that intensity that leads into his offense. And we kind of saw it last night, and how the team was kind of lost and not focused and didn't really move as well.
I would say you could argue that happened against Indiana as well, though, because Joel picked up those two early fouls, and then the offense just wasn't able to do anything against Indiana.
Correct.
And the way that it had been functioning in the, you know, the seven games leading up to that.
And they ran into a buzzsaw in that game, too, to use a tried and true cliche. I mean, that place was bonkers. Indiana was really fired up. You know, UNC, Roy specifically, you know, obviously he talks a lot about intensity and these intangible things. And, you know, that was one instance where I think he was correct, that UNC just didn't have that it factor that night. And they were just kind of blown off the ball early on and could never really recover.
I think when Indiana was knocking down so many of those shots with that crowd, the kind of momentum just completely shifted to their side, and it was hard to come back. But they got it down to 4, which was some pretty impressive.
They did.
To
they had a shot. They had a shot late. Which is more than you can say for some past UNC teams that might have just kind of collapsed.
And there's a lot that we certainly want to get in terms of beyond the Wednesday night performance against Davidson, while we've got Andrew Carter here from the News and Observer joining us here on Tar Heel Talk. And we'll do that whenever we come back, taking a little more of an overview at the UNC team so far on the basketball court. And, of course, coming up, looking forward to a couple of big-time matchups. Got Tennessee coming up on Sunday in the Smith Center. And then it's that trip out to Vegas, taking on those Kentucky Wildcats. Talking about all that whenever we come back here on WCHL. This is Tar Heel Talk. Welcome back into Tar Heel Talk, 97.9 FM, 1360 AM, WCHL. Blake Hodge alongside Ross Martin, as always. And this week, Andrew Carter back from the News and Observer, gracing us with a few minutes of his time on this Thursday, as we have got a lot of UNC athletics to talk about. Of course, basketball team front and center here as we're mixing in a lot of different games right now. They did just get announced, at the tail end of last week that UNC would be going to the Sun Bowl to take on Stanford down in El Paso. So we'll talk about that here in a little. Andrew was pumped to go to El Paso. So we'll do a Texas power rankings of Texas destinations of UNC athletics here. maybe we won't do that, but
I like that idea.
So the UNC team so far, I believe it's now 9-1 on the season through the first 10 games. I would argue probably came out a little further along than people maybe expected them to. After losing Marcus and Bryce, and as Roy said, you didn't just lose 2 of 8; you lost the best two from last year's team, as he viewed it. Of course, Joel Berry was the ACC tournament MVP last year. From an overall kind of taking the 30,000-foot view, Andrew, we were talking about this last week a little bit with Ross and I. What are your overall impressions from this team here 10 games in?
I think this is a team that could wind up in the exact same place UNC found itself in at the end of last year, playing on the final Monday night of the season. I think they have that kind of talent. I think they have the ability. I think they have the depth, especially. I think that's important. At its best, and we've seen kind of UNC at its best early on. I mean, this isn't like a question where we're wondering what does this team look like when they're playing really well? Yep. What's kind of the ceiling for them? We've kind of, we've seen that a little bit, which maybe I'm not sure if that's a great thing or not this early. But this is a team that played really, really well in Maui. Granted, one of those games was against Chaminade, a D2 team, but really took apart an improved Oklahoma State team, dominated Wisconsin.
At Wisconsin speed.
At Wisconsin speed in the second half. Yeah. Wisconsin, they're always good. That's mm-hmm. probably going to be a team that winds up in the Sweet 16 or maybe could get on a run. And so we've seen UNC really kind of at its peak. And that UNC team, not the one that we saw last night against Davidson, not the one that we saw at Indiana, I feel like definitely has a shot of winning it all. I think if you talk about Kentucky, you talk about Duke, Villanova is going to be in that discussion once again. I think UNC is right there with any of those.
As Duke is adding players, that team just gets scarier.
Yeah, talent-wise, UNC doesn't have that top-end NBA talent. But Joel Berry is a very good college player. Justin Jackson has really taken his game up another level. So I think the pieces are there. The question is whether they can be playing at a high enough level consistently enough night in, night out, especially come March.
That would be my question. What do you think holds this team back? When you say they have all the parts, they could be there Final Four last weekend in March or April. What do you think of the things that if something goes wrong, what do you think it's going to be?
Well, for one thing, last year they had, kind of two great point guards. They had Marcus Page, who played off the ball alongside Joel Berry, but when Berry was not in the game, sometimes Marcus was running the show. They didn't do that a ton, but at least they had that luxury. This year the question is, and we saw this last night, like when Joel goes out, if he gets in a foul trouble, if something happens to him, if, he can't play for a stretch because of a minor injury or whatever, who is going to be that guy that runs the offense? And right now, no one really has stepped forward. Nate Britt has experience,
right?
But consistency has been a bit of an issue for him. He didn't play very well last night.
I don't think this season as a whole, Nate has made any kind of the progression that people may have thought that he would make going. I mean, people knew going into the season that Nate was going to have to play a bigger role in this team than he has played.
He's been a little bit of an enigma to me because sometimes in moments, you know, I look out there and I'm like, man, Nate is like, he's playing well defensively. He hustles. You know, sometimes he make, you know, he has a capability of knocking down an outside shot. Last night didn't do it 0-for-8, but
I mean, the guy is a great guy, great kid. You know, he's been recruited over. And he's kind of been a backup point guard his entire career.
And he's always handled it very well.
Yeah, and that's kind of hard to do when you come in. You know, come in, you're a star AAU, and you go to Oak Hill, and you come in, you expect to be a player. And he's kind of, you know, played behind Marcus Paige, playing behind Joel Berry now. But like last night, he would just get to the hole, but just couldn't. The baskets didn't go in. I think he's just kind of limited because he's kind of short.
Right.
I don't know how else to put it, but like he gets there, he just can't make shots, he can't make the open threes, and we've seen him do that. I mean, I think he's just kind of, he is what he is, and I would expect him to be step into this role and be that senior experienced, consistent leader with a steady hand and kind of steady the troops, but we didn't see it last night, and that was kind of his time to shine. But Roy did go with him over 7th Woods.
Stillman over 7th Woods.
That's right, I mean, Stillman played a lot more than 7th Woods, which I thought was surprising, because the first part of that game last night, I thought 7th Woods made some great plays. He got to the hoop twice. You saw it kind of that burst of speed. Mm-hmm. Then we didn't see it much after that, and he was kind of benched in the second half.
Well, I didn't understand that entirely, and as Roy is very eager to tell all of us, he knows a hell of a lot more about basketball than we do. But there was a
well,
stretch.
There's no doubting that.
There was a stretch in that first half where 7th was, you know, a key part of the lineup that went on that run to get Carolina back in the lead. The plus minuses were much more in favor of 7th. And of course, you know, he had a limited time there where you're taking those numbers from. But I don't know if Roy is just overall not happy with something from 7th so far. I don't know if he's calling him 7th yet. I know that he wasn't as of a couple of weeks ago. But I'm a little bit confused by that. Whenever you had a chance last night to throw him out there and just and see, you know, it was a Wednesday in December. Of course, you want to get the win, but it's not an ACC game. It's not, you know, you had a chance to put him out there against guys that he should be able to, you know, athletically be a little further along than, and just see what happens, especially whenever I wasn't seeing anything overly impressive from Nate or Stillman.
No, I was a little bit surprised by that too. I mean, Roy kind of alluded to the notion that 7th might start last night.
Yeah.
Like that was in play after Joel went down with that sprained ankle. Roy didn't dismiss that thought. It seemed like he was giving that thought a lot of thought. For 7th to only play 11 minutes and not really be involved much in the second half, especially, that was a little bit surprising to me. But, you know, I do think, to your point, Roy is not especially happy with what we've seen out of 7th Wood so far. I'm not sure if it's a lingering problem with the injury. Not sure if it's a confidence issue with 7th, but, you know, there is something going on right now with 7th Woods that's kind of precluding him from being the player that Roy thought he would be. And even, you know, even if he, you know, was kind of free of all those burdens mentally, perhaps, that he's put on himself so far early in his freshman year, he was going to go through growing pains no matter what. But it seems a little bit deeper than just normal freshman growing pains.
And he has been dealing with a few injuries, and a guy that is kind of touted on his explosiveness, as he has been since he was 14, to have a little bit of that taken away from you, Ross, has got to be hard to try to overcome.
I don't
go to our athletic guru here.
We don't want to jump on this guy. I mean, it's 9 games in, and that transition from high school to college, I think, it's huge. I think some people handle it better than others, and some people have growing pains. I think that 9 games in, 7th Woods is struggling a little bit to handle the offense. Roy's talked about how difficult it is to run UNC's offense. You're counted on to do a lot in terms of getting players in positions and really being intense on both sides of the floor. And, you know, it takes time. Not everybody can do it. You know, Kendall Marshall didn't start his first couple games. You've seen guys struggle with that, and you know it's some guy's not going to roll in and be Raymond Felton or Ty Lawson. Even though Roy compared his speed to Ty Lawson on Tuesday, which
has
I thought
continued
was a little
to
odd.
Do that. Yeah, right.
He's like building this guy up to be the second coming, and the expectations are so high from him because you look at that highlight video on YouTube and all that stuff, and he comes with so much hype, and you know, obviously he hasn't lived up to it yet. But I think it's still very, very early to judge what we're going to get from 7th.
And to me, I don't even, like, I have a question, too, about just whether he's a point guard. you know, I'm not sure that he's more of a combo guard.
And he played off the ball in high school a lot.
He's not a true, you know, Marcus Page-like, Lawson-like, Felton-like point guard either. And yet Roy's kind of asked him to do that early on. And I'm wondering if that remains the case or what the deal is. He's kind of, you know, I guess if you were to compare him to a recent, you know, UNC player, Dexter Strickland would be the guy that comes to mind.
Yeah, Baden Jackson.
There you go.
It's a whole nother. We don't have enough time to.
Dexter Strickland changed his name, like I think, almost legally to Baden Jackson.
I believe it's
legal. I think it is legal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's on my to-do list.
We're going to be back. We got a lot more to talk about here on Tar Heel Talk on WCHF. Welcome back in, Tar Heel Talk, 97.9 FM, 1360 AM, WCHL. Blake Hodge alongside Ross Martin. This week, Andrew Carter from the News and Observer back in with us talking Tar Heel basketball so far, but we do want to shift our focus, pivot a little bit over to Tar Heel football as they're going to be taking on Stanford in the Sun Bowl. Already a little bit nervous over, I think Christian McCaffrey's already over 100 yards in that game. We'll see how he ends up. The Stanford was the Heisman Trophy, I believe, one of the finalists last year, second in the voting. So
he's already going pro, announced he's going pro too.
He has announced he's heading to the NFL. That could get ugly. But Carolina is going to have an offense that's got a lot of potential NFL talent on its side of the ball as well, led by redshirt junior quarterback Mitch Trubisky. And of course, a lot of people are going to be looking for a decision from him after that game, whether he will be going to the NFL. We'll talk about that in just a few minutes. But Andrew, we were talking about this last week of whether this was a disappointing football season, regular season, I should say, notwithstanding the bowl game.
Yeah, I think in the context of how the season played out, it was a disappointing season. I don't think you can argue otherwise. You know, UNC gets through that most difficult part of the schedule. At least you think it's the most difficult part of the schedule. Mm-hmm. These dramatic victories against Pitt at the last second, winning that game, then going down to Florida State, winning in that fashion, Nick Weiler making a 54-yarder. And this is a team that's rolling. Really, after that Georgia Tech game, I think what they were 7-1, they were 5-1 in the ACC. They were very much alive in that Coastal Division race. And then, I don't know what happened. I mean, it looked like for sure they were going to win 10 games at that point. All you have to do is split against Duke and State. Well, to win 9 games, you would have to split against Duke and State. But you win both those games, that's another 10-win season. Back-to-back, that's only happened twice in school history, getting to double-digit wins in consecutive years. In the context of the overall season, how they started, how they finished, I don't think you can make an argument for anything other than a disappointing year.
I think with the hype coming in, with Trubisky, offensive line, wide receivers, and improved defense, and how well Trubisky played, I completely agree. Andrew, can you put your finger on why they kind of fell apart at the end there with it's kind of unexplainable losses to Duke and State.
Go back to up 14-0 against Duke.
Can't explain it. I don't really know. It really makes offensive line issues or just what happened there where you lose to your rivals and teams that weren't even that good. Like Duke was 0-5 in the ACC. State was, I think, a little bit better than people thought, but still kind of slop.
Yeah, up front, State is good.
Yeah,
especially on the defensive line. You know, in that game in particular, I think that was the main problem for UNC. UNC just could not block those guys up front. They kind of got manhandled. NC State's defensive line put a lot of pressure on Trubisky. You know, it kind of took UNC out of some things that it likes to do. There are some questionable decisions in that game. UNC trying to come back. They have a third and inches inside the NC State 10. They go with TJ Logan in the Wildcat. That loses 2 yards. Then you go with this wide receiver pass thing, Switzer to Mitch Trubisky. So that was strange. So at times, UNC kind of shot itself in the foot. You go back, you know, the Duke game. UNC was rolling in that game. And all of a sudden, you take Elijah Hood out of it. You put in Chris Francis. Nothing against Chris. He's been great to deal with. He's a great kid. But you kind of got to dance with the girl you brought a little bit, have that mentality. And where's Elijah Hood in that game? You know, and that's when Duke really started turning that game, when Elijah disappears in the second quarter. And then he asked Fedora afterward, well, where's Elijah Hood? And he says, well, I have to talk to Larry, talking about Larry Porter, the running backs coach. So there are some questionable coaching decisions going on, and granted, we know only a fraction of what's actually happening behind the scenes in the meeting rooms, and, you know, discussions among these guys, what's happening on the sideline. So in fairness, we don't know a lot of kind of what is going on with these discussions, but still it's fair to ask, you know, why some of these decisions were made in terms of personnel play calling. So that had an effect down the stretch.
Daniel Jones making Duke him look like Michael Vick out
there. Part of this, too, is like, you know, Duke was not bad, you know, bad record, not a great record for Duke this year, but played Louisville well, was in some other games that it had a chance to win but didn't. And that's an important game for Duke. And UNC, to an extent, I think kind of expected to go over there and just kind of think it might be easy. They get up 14-0.
Especially
maybe.
14-0.
Yeah, 14-0. It just kind of changes after that, and Duke keeps on going, and you saw what happened.
And the whole build-up with the victory bells. Yeah, people saying buying spray paint already, and I think they kind of got distracted and thought they were going to roll over Duke, and they didn't. Got up by 14, thought it was going to be an easy
and then
kind
they just got,
win.
Yeah, and then they just got punched in the mouth against State and just kind of didn't get off the mat.
Yeah, same way they did to State last year of going there and being up 21-0 right off the bat. It felt like kind of reversal of roles there.
The Elijah Hood thing is just odd that in the games that UNC loses, it's like always you didn't run Hood enough.
Oh, he had six carries.
But a lot of it is in the flow of the game. Personnel and play calls, you know, depend on where the game is, the down and distance, but it's just a consistent trend that when Hood doesn't get a certain amount of carries, UNC always loses.
And I think there's something going on there, too, that has not really been disclosed. I'm not sure if it's a health issue, medical thing.
He was
dealing
with several injuries, concussion being one of those.
Yeah, concussion, and he alluded earlier this year, probably about a little bit beyond the midway point, that he was not healthy early on in the year, that he was dealing with something. You know, and this is kind of where UNC's injury policy of not discussing these things comes back to bite them a little bit, because it creates this mass confusion about, well, why are they doing things this way and not this other way, and where is Elijah? Where there could be a pretty simple explanation as to what's going on, and we just don't know it. It has not been disclosed. But I don't think Elijah is fully Elijah. I don't think he's fully healthy. I do think there's, you know, I think he's been dealing with some stuff all year long behind the scenes that has affected his ability to play at his potential.
So with all of the movement that has been going on at the coaching level, it seems like the majority of the big jobs have been filled at this point. LSU bringing on Orgeron to be the full-time coach, and it'll be at least a fun couple of years down there in LSU for the media covering him.
Yeah.
Tom Herman at Texas. You've got Baylor hired the Temple coach that I forget his name
Rule.
Now.
Matt, is it Matt Rule?
Matt Rule.
Willie Taggart. Going
Rule with
to
an H.
And what that means is it certainly appears that Larry's going to be in Chapel Hill again next year.
He's not going to USF.
No, he's Larry's going to be here for sure. He's not going anywhere at this point. I didn't think he was really going to go anywhere barring Texas offering him the job. Maybe LSU, although that seemed unlikely too, just because LSU was so focused on Jimbo, and then Orgeron emerged as the most viable candidate there. So then it became this thing of, you know, is Texas going to strike out on Tom Herman, who was clearly Texas's top choice, and once that happened, I think it was pretty clear that Larry was going to be here. I never believed for a second the speculation that he was interested in Baylor, that he wanted that job. I thought that was a bunch of nonsense.
That was odd. You had the Bleacher
Jason
Report,
King,
Bleacher Report come out with the not only was he interested, would have taken it, but was never contacted. And Fedora doesn't usually comment on any kind of job speculation, but you got an actual response out of him this time, Andy.
Yeah, we had an interesting exchange here, some of which I printed the last part of it, or at least posted it on Twitter, but we had an interesting back and forth there a couple other times just before that. You know, him just expressing this disbelief at some of the stuff that was out there surrounding him. And you're right, Larry's MO has been not to comment on this stuff, to just ignore it. But I think he felt so strongly about this one, at the suggestion and notion that he wanted this Baylor job, that Baylor did not interview him, and that he was, quote, crushed not to be the Baylor head coach. I mean, it was just, you know, Jason King has done a great job at his past stops. You know, he did a great job covering Kansas back in the day. He's a pretty respected sports journalist, but I believe he went to Baylor. I'm not sure if, you know, he had some Baylor folks feeding him some information maybe to make Baylor look better throughout this situation. I don't know. But Fedora was really shocked and taken aback by some of the speculation that was out there. And again, he felt so strongly about it that he ignored his own rule and came out and dismissed this stuff, which I thought was the right move, because I think some of that stuff was making him look pretty bad. He's happy here. you know, outside of football, independent of even job stuff, I think he really likes Chapel Hill. I know his wife likes it a whole lot. I think family-wise, he's very happy here. I think he feels a part of the community. I think he really likes working with Bubba. And that's an that's a hugely important thing, too, yeah. When you're a head football coach, just to have the support of your AD, to have a great working relationship with that person who brought you in. And Larry has that with Bubba, which, you know, it's kind of strange to think that Bubba came close to accepting the AD job at Florida back in August. He came very close to leaving UNC. And if that might have happened, then who knows whether Fedora, you know, whether he feels the same way about staying here, or if he's trying to look for other jobs or whatever. But the reality is that he's here. He likes working with Bubba. His wife likes it again. And then, yeah, on the field, I think Fedora believes that he has everything that he needs to compete at a very high level, to win division championships like UNC did a year ago, to compete for ACC championships, and to possibly compete for a national championship. Yeah. I think he believes that they can reach that level. They do have a lot of work recruiting-wise to do. I think they have a lot of work in terms of rebuilding a football culture, if you will, generating more fan support, getting more people to fill the seats at Keenan. I think that's an important thing for Larry. But he believes in this place, and I think it would take a very special offer somewhere else to entice him to leave.
Well, we have got a lot more to get to. One other person that we've been talking about their future a little bit, the UNC quarterback, Mitch Trubisky. We'll talk through that and weigh in a little bit on a potential NFL decision there for the Tar Heel Signal caller as well when we get back on Tar Heel Talk. Welcome back into Tar Heel Talk, 97.9 FM, 1360 AM, WCHL, Blake Hodge, Ross Martin, and Andrew Carter from the News and Observer, getting up to join us this week as we have been talking a lot of Carolina basketball, of course, looking a little bit at Carolina football as well, as they have got the Sun Bowl coming up against Stanford later on this month, and that'll really, it could change the perspective on the entire season, of course. But we have got a few guys from the Carolina team that we know are going to be gone. A lot of the receivers are seniors, a lot of the guys along the offensive line trying to make their way into the NFL. But there are a couple of guys, of course, that have the option to leave, and we'll have to look at that because Mitch Trubisky had one of the best seasons of any Carolina quarterback in the history of the program. And he's a redshirt junior. First year he's actually getting to play. Everybody had been hyping up Trubisky all throughout the training camp and certainly seemed that he was prepped for a breakout year and by all accounts had it. So there are some mock drafts that actually have Trubisky going number one overall to the hometown Cleveland Browns.
That'd be a nice story.
It would be a nice story. It may also be a little bit of a stretch, but there are a lot of recruiting or scouting NFL scouts that seem to be saying he is, if not the top, one of the top couple of guys and one of the only few quarterbacks that could go in the first round of the NFL draft.
Yeah, for sure. And I think if that's the case for Mitch, I don't see any scenario in which he comes back to school, because why would you? I think in that situation, I think he would have to go. I think it'd be a no-brainer. You know, you have to look at how long you can actually play this game for a living. Every year that you spend in college is another year, if you're an NFL caliber player, that you're not making a lot of money playing in the NFL.
But if you're playing in Cleveland, how many years does that take off of a normal NFL span?
I mean, that's a good point, too.
Yeah, there's not much discussion here. I mean, if he's a first-round pick, even second-round pick, you got to go. I mean, that's the money. You get that guaranteed cash. You start your NFL career. And then we were talking about this before the show about how, I mean, if he does come back, he's throwing to three new wide receivers. You know, Austin Prohl is the only proven guy. Mm-hmm. You know, offensive line loses Lucas Crowley, who's the best, most consistent player. Caleb Peterson, mm-hmm. John Heck. You're going to be starting, you know, three or four new guys on the offensive line. So, obviously, next year could be a worse year for him. It's not like he's going to come in and have a similar season. I think if he did come back, it'd be more of a struggle, more of a challenge for him. So the writing's on the wall. He's dodged a lot of questions. Obviously, he's playing it close to the vest. But I think it's safe to say that the smart move would be to go. And I don't think anybody's – I think – I'm sure his advisors are telling him that. I'm sure the coaches are telling him that. I think his family's telling him that. And Yeah, who knows where he goes? You know, it could be a guy that goes mid-round, mid-first round.
There's so much still left to be determined between here and January 16th, whenever he has to make that decision, that deadline, and then, of course, the combine and the draft and everything. So that could all shake out so many different ways. And there are a few other guys that are not seniors that certainly have the option to look. Or, of course, before the season, I think everybody would have assumed Elijah Hood was probably going to be gone. He had some injuries and everything else that he was dealing with throughout the season that maybe didn't turn out the way that he expected it, but that may end up being more of a reason for him to test the NFL waters. Also, from the defensive side, even though the Carolina defense was obviously the weaker of the two units there, there are a couple of guys that are very good players that are not at that senior level, but Nas Jones, MJ Stewart, I don't know that anybody has a whole lot of perspective on this from those guys in general, but what are y'all hearing from anybody else around the program about what or how they may be leaning?
Yeah, nothing firm, really. I mean, those guys, they're so savvy nowadays in terms of limiting information and, you know, just if they're asked about it, just kind of providing a non-statement of a statement. But I expect Nas to leave, to declare for the draft. I think, you know, some family situations or his family situation coming from where he came from in Roanoke Rapids, kind of a rougher part of town, not having a lot of resources or money growing up. I think it's important for him to try to get a leg up on his career and his finances and try to start making some money, you know, which you have to applaud that decision. If you're in a position to be drafted at all and make an NFL roster and fulfill a dream and also take care of your family financially, I think that's a great thing. So I would expect him to go. MJ Stewart, I'm not quite sure on on that. I don't think no one really in that secondary had a very good year. You know, the interception thing was very weird. They only picked off one pass all year long. So just, you know, statistically the numbers weren't there, and even if these guys might have played successfully against the pass, you look at some of those stats, you know, some games where they gave up big yards and didn't intercept any passes for long stretches of the year, you have to wonder how that might affect a guy like MJ Stewart's draft stock. I have less of a read on him. I do think Nas is going to be the guy that leaves. And then Elijah, too, is kind of a toss-up there. I'm interested to see what happens with him. If I were him, I think I would probably leave.
Yeah, so I mean, what I think Elijah is just a different guy. If you talk to the guy, he's smart. He's very cerebral in terms of what he says, what he thinks. He's got engaged. But, yeah, with running backs, I mean, your shelf life in the NFL is 2 years, I think, is the average.
Right.
So you want to get in. And, you know, any time you're in college is just time you are making money. And he's good enough. I think he played behind a kind of a questionable offensive line this year and how they used him in certain games.
Weird.
You put him on a team in the NFL, you see his speed, his burst, his strength, kind of that workhorse back mentality. I think he could definitely make an NFL roster. It'd be interesting to see what he does. I think you're right on Nas. I think Nas is a great player. I mean, he's huge. He's smart. He's a good leader. He's big. He's quick. He kind of has that fast twitch inside, which they like out of the defensive tackles. I think he's the full package. I mean, obviously, I'm not an NFL scout. I don't know exactly how good this guy is, but he's a guy that's probably going to get drafted. What, 3, 4, 5 rounds?
He'll get drafted somewhere.
Yeah,
somewhere in the mid to late rounds, probably.
Someone told me you can't teach size. Mm-hmm. That's what Nas has. MJ Stewart, he's really good. I don't know how good he is compared to a lot of other cornerbacks, but talking to Coach Warren, the defensive backs coach, I mean, MJ has what it takes. I don't know if this year was a great indication of that. I mean, he played well. Just the interception things is kind of odd. But I think Dez and MJ are good, consistent cornerbacks who I think MJ could get drafted. I think I'm looking at some mock drafts here, and it looks like he's a late-round guy, 6 or 7. So he could benefit from another year. Who knows? You know, these guys make decisions based on what they're hearing from certain guys, so we'll see. But those are the three main underclassmen, I believe. But yeah, it's football. Sun Belt. Yeah, you pumped?
You know what? I am a little bit pumped because I've never been to El Paso, and I've heard some good things.
Have you?
Believe it or not, I've never been to the far reaches of Texas.
It's so weird. It's going to be fun.
You know, I think it'll be. From what I hear, the community of El Paso loves this game. They really get behind it. It is an event in town. They use it to promote tourism there, like any bowl does, but it's a different level than El Paso.
I heard they just sell tons of tickets to
locals.
This is
a huge deal. Yeah,
this is a good game. I mean, you have two really good offensive teams. Yeah. People are ranking this as like the best bowl, like the must-watch bowl.
Yeah, outside of like the New Year's 6 games.
And I think that's part of it. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be – I think it's the only game in that time slot, so it's going to get
CBS,
all the attention and all that kind of stuff. So it certainly is going to be one that's – higher ranking, I think, than it could have been. We talked about this last week. Going to the Pinstripe Bowl and playing against Northwestern did absolutely nothing to get me excited.
I mean, it would have been New York City would have been neat. Playing in Yankee Stadium, I think, is kind of an event, a unique thing. But in terms of just football matchup, this is a much more attractive matchup.
McCaffrey, Stanford has this allure to it.
Thanks so much, Andrew Carter from the News and Observer. Ross Martin, of course, over at 24/7 Sports, CarolinaBlue.com through CBS Sports and all that kind of stuff. And I'm Blake Hodge here with WCHL on 97.9 FM, 1360 AM. This is Tar Heel Talk.